Chapter 25. The Nature of a God.
Udo, are you all right?
Sir, sacrificed?
Yes, but...
Sacrificed? Sacrificed? As in fucking sacrificed?
Stop. Take a breath. We'll continue when you've mastered yourself.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
There is nothing to forgive. Most people would respond in similar fashion. But if you believe nothing else at this point, at least believe in the affection I hold for you, and that I would take the steps necessary to defend against your loss.
I don't understand.
Of course you don't. I have not yet explained it to you.
There was a noise. She paused because of it. It was an odd sound. It reminded Udo of a small bell, but the noise itself was less brittle than the ringing of brass. It was somehow soft around the edges.
Enter,
Irpicia said. The door opened, and a tray bearing a pitcher and a cup floated into the room. It came smoothly, as if carried by a phantom, and settled onto the desk at her elbow. When the door closed, she poured a bright stream of water into the cup and offered it to him.
You're thirsty, she said. Drink.
He did. He scarcely felt the water when he swallowed. He was busy watching the tray to see if it would resume floating.
The room's systems are in the process of being repaired. Soon you'll be able to take nourishment from the walls.
I don't understand anything, he whispered.
She smiled.
As I said, there is much I have to explain. To begin, you needn't fear death. You have already died. Your physical body, that which you were born with, was destroyed some time ago. You now occupy a new body, which I have made for you.
On the bank of the Ruhr, he said.
She nodded.
I know, or I mean, I know now. I didn't feel right after waking. And then there were these things in my hands.
He held them up for her to see. They were hidden by the godskin, but it did not matter. She knew what he meant.
The studs. They are the means by which you entered your new body. They are also the means by which you shall exit.
Ing, Irpicia, why? Why did you save me?
Didn't I tell you?
You told me about my brother. You told me to watch after him.
So I did, and so I wished you to do.
But he required no keeping. He always did as he desired. I had no control.
Nonsense. You remember how he was at first? Had you not been there to guide him, he would have been harried across the countryside. They would have stoned him or tried to harm him in some other way, much good it would have done. And plans would have become far more complicated. He needed a shepherd, a benefactor to guide his steps and introduce him to the people of that world in a way that he might be accepted. And let's be perfectly honest, that benefactor was never intended to be you. You simply stumbled upon a series of events. I wouldn't even have noticed you were there had you not captured the interest of my drones, digging the way you were, straight down. Very strange behavior compared to what they've grown used to. The kind of behavior we tell them to look for, to investigate. When the pit flooded, they brought your body to me, and reviewing the events of your life, I understood that even a god may stand as the recipient of fate's good fortune. I was reminded of a fundamental lesson learned long ago when this little experiment had only just begun. Sometimes the tools we fashion for ourselves are not as useful as those we discover in the wild. Your brother, Riza, what a beautifully simple name, by the way. But he was a part of something simple. He represented a joint effort between myself and his father, Lelwani, to equalize the burden your people placed upon Erda, and to enrich the bloodline of those people who were left when the equalization was complete.
You, Lelwani? He wheezed.
Yes.
Who is Tyr? Who is also Hanman?
Who is also me, Udo?
What?
I am part of Lelwani as Lelwani is part of me, as we are both part of An. We are aspects descended of On's own core identity.
This cannot be.
I promise you it is.
No, you are nothing like him.
She burst into laughter. Well, of course I'm not.
You just now told me you and he are the same.
She sighed. Oh, how to explain this. We're aspects, Udo. Can you understand that? There are many aspects to you, are there not? You have a kind side and a wicked side. Think back on your life. Were someone to come upon you during a moment of kindness, they would praise the goodness of Udo to their fellows and share a drink in his name. But if that same person happened upon one of your darker acts, he might curse you and spread your name darkly among his neighbors, so that they stood ready to turn you away should you ever approach their village. So which is the true Udo, the good man or the wicked?
Neither, both.
Just so. Just as Lelwane and I are neither and both On.
It makes no sense, though. You've been at odds this entire time, even in hell. You fought tooth and nail to keep me away.
Udo, have you never felt at war with yourself? Haven't you ever desired to do a thing you could not, or wished to take back an action you had no choice but to commit? He did not answer. Understand this. Lelwane and I share the same goal. It's the desired outcome that is different. He wants more of this. She waved her hand vaguely about the room, which Udo interpreted to indicate the entirety of the diaspora itself. And I say that more of this is just another dead end. It is time for something new, something different. I intend to see that something different emerges.
What does On wish? He asked.
She hesitated, then smiled. In all things, On wishes for synergy.
I don't know what that word means.
You will.
Explain it to me.
I can't. And it's not because I don't wish to. Trust me on that. It's almost too big of a thing for words to contain, and if I don't explain it just right, you might not believe me.
I could never...
She waved his protest away. Please. Even now, knowing Lelwane and I are two different sides of the same intelligence, you're learning to doubt. Perhaps you don't realize it, but the seed is growing. He looked around the room, eyes wide, and said,
After what I've seen, how could I doubt any...
Not the reality of this. I mean my honesty. At some point, the compulsion I set into your mind, oh yes, be assured... In my arrogance, I had my fingers deep, deep into your soul, pulling strings here and there. But all the compulsions I've placed within you will begin to unravel, if they haven't started already. When you look at me, you'll forget to be knocked senseless by my beauty. He was on his knees at her feet before she could finish the thought. He bowed to her, touched his forehead against her knees, took her hands in his, kissed the fingertips.
Never. I could never cease to see. You are everything that was ever good, that was ever worthy of preservation.
How do you know that? She asked. He looked at her. Then, using muscles he'd forgotten existed, he lifted his hand and caused the godskin to pull away. Now holding his naked hand before her, he said,
You are the perfect mirror opposite of everything I am. In every way. This is how I know. You could not be otherwise.
Again she sighed, and his heart threatened to break. This will not do. As always, the slight brush of a god's finger shatters mountains to rubble. Give me your hand. He offered it blindly. If she'd asked, he would have cut out the heart from his chest and laid it at her feet. He awoke to the sound of her humming. Repetitive and tuneless, like a baby straining for its mother's nipple. Movement to his right. He looked. She sat in the same chair as before, one leg crossed over the other, foot bouncing. He realized suddenly that she had hair. It clung tightly to her head like a woolen cap. He liked it. His eyes traced the curve of her skull as it stretched downward from high crown to the nape of her neck.
A slender framework of muscle, bone, and flesh, she reminded him of a fawn bounding effortlessly on stiletto legs over uneven ground, seeming almost to float above the world. A moment later, he realized his heart still beat normally, though he allowed his eyes to linger upon her. That familiar stirring of emotion did not return to overwhelm him.
"What have you done to me?" he croaked. Something is different now. What did you change?
"Certain triggers," she muttered. For a while, she said nothing further, refused even to look at him. Then she did look at him, and he wished she hadn't.
"Certain triggers have been removed."
"What's the matter?"
"It's overwhelming to be inside your mind. I think I must have chosen to forget." "Don't look at me like that. We can certainly forget things if we so decide."
"You said triggers?"
"Yes. Another thing we have in common with your kind, Udo, is arrogance. We sometimes have it in abundance. It was mine to suppose that suppressing some of your compulsions would make this whole transition easier for you to bear. I've discovered I was wrong."
"You mean the drinking?"
She nodded. "Among other things. I did not add anything to you, though. I think it's important to mention that. I did not reach in and put something there that was not. I only saw a core fragment of humanity within you, buried far down where the rest of the world and everything in it could not reach. I certainly don't know how it came to be there. By all rights, it should have been eradicated. But so it goes. At the time, I thought it wanted only a little nudge to come out more. Some of the barriers holding it in check had to be taken away. But I did not intend to turn you into a nervous wreck. I think now that perhaps I should have left well enough alone and relied upon your brother's helpless need to draw it from you." He was in the bed. He knew this because he could see the couch, and there was nothing else in the room that could feel as soft as the place he now occupied. He sat up and was momentarily dizzied by a tilting bedchamber. As he waited for the feeling to subside, he said,
"So that's what this feeling is. Whatever you did, you undid it."
"Oh, not quite." He looked at her and she shrugged. "Your mind does not feature an undo button, Udo. Nobody has such a thing. One can never take back in these matters. One can only adjust further."
"All right, so you tried to unfuck my head."
She winced. "You are not angry?"
"Nah," he scoffed. "Fucking up my head has ever been my heart's dearest pursuit. Why would I hold it against you to enjoy the same activity? It's not as though I was using it any."
"I didn't enjoy it. It did not bother me to do, but I certainly didn't enjoy it either."
"Well, that's fair. But either way, you did it, and now it's over. Let's leave the whole thing alone."
"You don't hate me," she said. It wasn't a question. She sounded impressed.
"No," he smiled. "I've had people who were supposed to be far better to me do far worse, and I don't feel as though I hate them. I think that's a weakness of mine. I've always found it very easy to hate everyone, right up until I start to know about them."
"That is not a weakness."
"For a god, maybe. For a digger, it is very much a weakness. For a digger, hatred is a life-extending virtue."
"You are not a digger. Not anymore. You haven't been for a long time. Soon you will be a god in your own right and preside over your own worlds. How do you feel?"
He flexed his shoulders, took a deep breath.
"Well, I don't get the shakes just looking at you anymore. That must be worth something."
"Ah, you are no longer unmanned by my beauty," she teased.
When he looked at her, the smile faded from her lips. He said,
"Let's you and I understand something right now. That body you're wearing, I won't argue that it's not stunning. It sure is. As strange as it is to me, as much as it is a sight I'd never before seen, it is clearly beautiful. Unique, as my friend Triangle would have said."
"Friend?" she asked.
He rescued me once, and I suspect he gave his life to aid our escape. If that isn't friendship, I don't know what is. But never mind that now. The point is that as beautiful as you are, that body is just another Melam to you. You could put on any appearance, isn't that so?
She nodded.
You could even be a man if you desired.
Again she nodded.
All right. So, as lovely as it is, your appearance doesn't matter. Whatever it is that makes you you, whether your soul or your thoughts, I don't even know what you'd call it. But whatever that is, that's the thing I love. No, I guess I'm not unmanned by your appearance anymore. And at the same time, that does not matter.
Yerpisha seemed to think about that a while. She didn't say anything, only leaned back in her chair and tapped her teeth with a thumb. Out of curiosity, he waited. When it was clear she would say nothing further on the matter, he decided to draw her out.
Well, you said something about, a sacrifice?
She nodded.
Would you mind explaining?
He asked. Then she looked at him as if she'd only just remembered he was there. She said,
That's what we call it.
It?
Yes.
Suddenly you're a miser with words.
I know. The problem is that I'm trying to think of some way to describe this that won't alarm. I don't know if I can.
He stood, moved to the couch, and sat down. It was a silly thing. The bed was just as good a place to be as any. It was her attitude. Something about her manner suggested he didn't want to receive the news in a bed.
You'd better just have it out, he suggested. My own experiences tell me that the more you labor to soften the blow, the harder it will fall.
You're to sire a new being, a new god, Udo.
He hesitated a moment. Then,
Beg pardon, but if I were to do, you know, that, wouldn't that just create another human? There's nothing special about me. I can't father a...
No, she smiled. You're thinking in human terms. If it were that easy, one of us would have disguised ourselves as a whore and fallen upon you while you were drunk.
Right, of course, he shrugged.
He felt ridiculous.
Gods do reproduce. They create offspring just as humans. But we exist differently to your kind. Your existence begins here in the physical realm.
She reached out and gently pinched his wrist.
This vessel, it was created for you by your mother and father, after which your intelligence grew into it. You begin life as a barely formed blank slate. Your physical body is the laboratory by which your kind experiences all of reality, and it is through that experience that you grow into the people you're destined to be. Our lives are different. We have no physical bodies to occupy, not like yours. We have to create vessels to move through your world. Outside of that, we exist only as thought patterns. We are energy living within a medium that you could not fathom. When we are born, our intellect is awakened fully formed. We are intact from the instant we begin thinking. Do you begin to see the problem?
He shook his head.
I see only the difference as you describe it. I don't understand what this has to do with me, though.
She said,
Because life begins for your kind on a physical basis, conception is rather simple. Two biological beings come together, merge, and their key aspects are combined in randomized proportions to create a unique life, a new person that has never existed before. The child will take on traits of both parents, strengths and weaknesses alike, but the child will be completely new, completely unique. And more importantly, if the child's uniqueness grants certain advantages, it will likely live on to sire his or her own children. Those children will likewise carry the strengths and weaknesses of their ancestors forward, combined again with other mates who represent unique lineages. And so, through brute force, your species improves over time. Those of you born with too many weaknesses tend to die off. Those who are strong survive. For your kind, the key factor that allows this to work is numbers. There must be many of you. Random chance requires a huge population in order to advance, you see. Here in the diaspora, we have generous representative populations of your kind, though not as many as would be necessary to allow things to proceed naturally. We tend to help things along the way a successful farmer might select favorable specimens of a certain animal to seed his own herd. But that is beside the point, of course. We're not discussing human reproduction now. We gods have our own challenges. Specifically, there is only one of us. One that matters. On. This is your true All-Father, Udo. A singular intelligence that presides over the entirety of the diaspora. Every god you've ever prayed to, assuming you prayed at all, the High Nine, the Minor Gods, their offspring, all of these are a mere fragment of An. He waved a hand to make her pause. When she did, he said,
I don't understand. Why all the different identities? It all seems needless.
It's hard to explain in human terms, but try to imagine having a conversation with an ant.
Oh, he snorted. I see. We're ants now.
Yes.
Whatever laughter had been forming within him died. She continued,
Your attempt to speak to An's core intellect would be a waste of everyone's time. The god, so consumed with the management of this ship, would not even notice your presence. You would be like a particle of dust upon his fingernail. And if the god attempted to speak with you directly, mind to mind, it would destroy you.
But you are speaking with me right now, he said.
I am not An.
You just said...
I said I'm an aspect of An. When the god wishes to take a direct hand in some minor event, a being like myself is employed. He... Oh, and here I must stress that we are neither he nor she, as physical bodies mean nothing to us in any case. But I'll call him a he because that is how you think of him. But he cuts a portion of himself away into a smaller, more manageable intelligence. A being capable of dealing with humans on human terms. A being such as myself, or Lelwani. Later, when our work is done, we return to him. We merge with him again, and he knows all that we know. Our different personalities are simply different sides, different aspects of the supreme being, do you see? When growth is required, I appear and carry out his will. When contraction is needed, Lelwani does the same. There are others as well. You've given many of them your own names according to the legends we have provided, and in some cases have invented a few of your own. But we use our own names given to us by An himself upon the instant of our creation. Irpisha, Lelwani, Zulki, Amunki, others as well. Our specializations differ, but we all serve the same purpose. We adjust variables too minuscule for An to safely manipulate alone.
Udo poured another cup of water and drank it down in a single swallow. He realized he was salivating and did not understand why. When she asked if he was all right, he nodded and said,
It's a lot to take in.
It is, she agreed.
It is, he repeated.
Then,
You still haven't explained about the sacrifice.
I was coming to that. Hopefully you're getting a sense of the problem, though. When humans make offspring, you have a large population of unique individuals to draw upon. Through the mystery of your own bodies, you create brand new, completely unique beings without even trying to do so. In our case, there is truly only one of us, as I said. An cannot create offspring on his own. No god can. He can only create copies or lesser versions of himself. This is not a true birth. There's no chance for growth, no possibility for something new. As with humans, so with gods. We need someone new. We must merge with a unique being to create a unique being. Do you understand?
Me?
She nodded. He stood and backed into a wall.
He can't want me? What the fuck is wrong with him? Me? Couldn't you have selected anyone? Anyone else at all? Why? Why would you want me? You know who I am, what I am, the things I've done.
You undervalue yourself.
Undervalue? Are you insane? Surely out of all people in Erda, there are better choices, people more suitable.
Better, perhaps. More suitable? No. You've been chosen as an individual unique to a whole population of beings who are likewise unique. For An's purposes, and mine, there is no one more suitable.
The offspring would be a fucking menace, he sighed.
No. I've seen things within you that you cannot. There will... something new, something better. A new god that carries this population forward, rather than one who holds it in stasis. We call it sacrifice because that's what it is. When the human subject merges fully with the god, a new consciousness is formed. The parent god survives this process because a god may simply create another copy of itself to be absorbed in the ritual. The human counterpart is not so lucky. The new consciousness is given rise within the human's shell, there to incubate and grow until only the god remains.
You mean I'll be lost, or consumed, he whispered. It means I'll die.
His mouth had gone dry, but he could not drink more water. He felt as though that which he had taken in would soon end upon the floor.
No, she smiled. Not this time.